This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Egregious, poor decision-making. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Monday, July 18. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
A report from an investigative committee in Texas spreads the blame for the Uvalde school shooting on police, school officials, and the gunman's family.
A shooter at a mall in Indiana killed three people and injured two others before he was killed by an armed civilian.
Ukraine's president has fired two high-ranking officials believed to be collaborating with Russia, including the head of the Secret Service.
And guess who's fueling the surge in streaming services?
Americans who are 50 and older are powering the growth of streaming video in the U.S. So these are cord cutters. These are people who heard during the pandemic from their relatives that they were watching hit shows and wanted in on the action.
Sarah Krause at the Wall Street Journal on people ages 50 to 64 streaming more than those ages 35 to 49. A new report from state legislators in Texas about the Uvalde school shooting finds that widespread failures by hundreds of armed police officers led to delays in confronting the gunman that may have cost lives. The 82-page document details a culture of noncompliance by school personnel in propping doors open and circumventing locks. Grace Valencia's nephew was among the 19 children killed.
It's been lie after lie. They've been saying that the door was locked, that they were looking for the key, this, that, bunch of lies.
The report cites confusion about leadership among law enforcement. Here's State Representative Dustin Burroughs.
There's a strong emphasis, and we put it in the report, that it is more likely than not, very strong, that if somebody had just gone up and tried the door handle, they could have opened it without a key.
Even after hearing at least four shots from the classrooms, 45 minutes after police arrived, officers did not move to enter the room. The report also says the 18-year-old shooter was driven by a desire for notoriety and fame. He was eventually killed at the scene by Border Patrol agents. Three people have been killed and two others have been injured after a shooter opened fire in the food court of a mall just south of Indianapolis. Police in Greenwood, Indiana, say at around 6 o'clock last evening, multiple people called 911 to report an active shooter at the Greenwood Park Mall. Greenwood Police Department Chief Jim Eisen says investigators believe the unidentified gunman was then shot and killed by an armed civilian who witnessed the shooting.
The real hero of the day is the citizen that was lawfully carrying a firearm in that food court and was able to stop the shooter almost as soon as he began.
The victims include one male and four females, including a 12-year-old girl whose parents brought her to the hospital with minor injuries after the shooting. Police say she's expected to be fine. The second injured victim was hospitalized and in stable condition. Greenwood Mayor Mark Myers expressed his thanks to the 22-year-old man who fatally shot the gunman. Overseas now, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which began in late February, has exposed doubts about the allegiance of some high-ranking Ukrainian security service members. So yesterday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky removed his general prosecutor and the head of the security service of Ukraine amid allegations that their offices had Russian collaborators. We get more now from this morning's Dave Duncan.
The Wall Street Journal says the security service of Ukraine has for years faced allegations that its ranks are infiltrated by Russian assets. Known as the SBU, it is Ukraine's main security and intelligence agency. Ivan Bakanov, the fired security chief, was a childhood friend of Zelensky, who just 2 years ago said there's never been such an honest head of the security service. Zelensky says 651 treason cases had been registered concerning workers in Ukrainian law enforcement and the prosecutor's office. Gordon?
Thank you, Dave. Mr. Zelensky says more than 60 employees of the SBU and prosecutor's office were working for Russia in occupied areas of Ukraine. Yesterday's actions weren't the only recent terminations. On Saturday, Ukrainian authorities arrested Oleg Kulinich, the former head of the SBU's department in Crimea, on suspicion of collaborating with Russian security services. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect? The taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. Here's a trend that's developed since the Supreme Court overturned the landmark Roe v. Wade abortion decision. Democrats are increasingly talking about abortion in their midterm campaign advertising, while Republicans are mentioning it rarely following the late June decision. John McCormick, national politics reporter at the Wall Street Journal, has been looking at the latest data. John, what did you find?
We looked at actually more than a million political ads. I mean, not literally, nobody could watch a million political ads, but we looked at the data behind about a million political ads since April 1st, and especially since that Supreme Court leak happened in early May, and then the reversal of Roe v. Wade came in late June. We especially looked at that period. And what you see is that Democrats are eager to advertise on this topic. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, some of them are still in primary campaigns where they are trying to, you know, move to the left and really win over liberal voters in their states. And then in other places, they feel like it's a good general election topic as well, especially in some places, you know, suburban battlegrounds trying to appeal to women and that sort of thing.
Are there PACs or rich folks who are providing the money for these ads? Where's the money coming from?
Yeah, well, a lot of it is coming from, you know, just the run-of-the-mill campaigns, and obviously those people do their fundraising. But the big national entities are also getting involved. Planned Parenthood spent about $1 million against Ron Johnson, the Republican Senate incumbent in Wisconsin, trying to beat him up on the topic of abortion. And, you know, there are other conservative groups that are actually advertising heavily on the topic as well, trying to help, you know, conservative candidates win their primaries.
We're speaking with John McCormick, national politics reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His story is called Democrats Eager to Talk About Abortion in Campaign Ads as GOP Shies Away from Issue. It's often said, too, that abortion is not necessarily that drives people to the polls, but that was, you know, before the Supreme Court decision. You get any sense that people feel differently now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be an important issue for some voters, but we're not seeing evidence that it's really going to sway, that this decision by the Supreme Court is really going to sway the midterm elections one way. Democrats just have such a headwind on the economy and inflation, and sort of also just the tradition that, you know, the first midterm of a new president is typically bad for his party. And so, you know, people are estimating that this could make a difference in very close suburban congressional districts. But, you know, it's probably going to be a couple points here or there. Democrats are hoping that it will juice turnout, that it will really drive their base to turn out in November. Midterm elections are typically really low turnout affairs compared to presidential elections.
Back to the political ads themselves regarding the abortion issue. You said some of the ads are personal. Like how?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. One of the top Democratic candidates in that Wisconsin Senate race, they've got a primary coming up on August 9th. He launched an ad this week where he basically has his mother testify about an abortion that she had before he was born. And so it's, you know, pretty pretty compelling ad. It's not something you typically see someone talking about an abortion that they had, before they gave birth to their son, who is now the candidate. In that Wisconsin race, that's where we're seeing the most heavy advertising on the abortion topic. It's a high spending race to begin with, because one of the candidates is son of a billionaire, and so he's been able to advertise a lot. And Johnson is being targeted by liberal groups and Planned Parenthood, as I mentioned earlier. So the state is attracting a lot of attention. But you know, we looked at where is this abortion topic playing most heavily, and it is in that Wisconsin Senate race.
Thanks, John. John McCormick, national politics reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Nearly 400 law enforcement officials rushed to a mass shooting at a Uvalde elementary school, but egregiously poor decision-making resulted in more than an hour of chaos before the gunman took 21 lives, was finally confronted and killed, according to a damning investigative report released yesterday. The nearly 80-page report was the first to criticize both state and federal law enforcement, and not just local authorities, for the bewildering inaction by heavily armed officers as a gunman fired inside two fourth-grade classrooms, committee member Eva Guzman.
We also found the reality of the breakdowns in procedures and protocols and processes, of the breakdowns and failures in judgment and decision-making that occurred before and during the tragedy.
The gunman fired some 142 rounds inside the building, at least 100 of which came before any officer entered.
Number two.
Three people were fatally shot and two were injured last evening at an Indiana mall after a man with a rifle opened fire in a food court. The man entered the Greenwood Park Mall with a rifle and several magazines of ammunition and began firing. A 22-year-old who was legally carrying a firearm at the mall shot and killed the gunman.
Number three.
President Biden says he will move forward with his own efforts to combat climate change and curb greenhouse gas emissions after Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia told Democratic leadership he won't support the climate provisions in the reconciliation bill. In a statement, Biden said if the Senate won't move to tackle the climate crisis, he will take executive action. Firefighters are battling wildfires raging out of control in France and Spain as Europe wilts under an unusually extreme heat wave that authorities in Madrid blame for hundreds of deaths. Two huge blazes have consumed pine forests for 6 days in southwestern France and have forced the evacuation of 14,000 people. The UK could have its hottest day on record this week, with temperatures forecast to hit 106. Cameron Smith charged his way into history on the Old Course, a stunner at St. Andrews that sent the Australian to his first major by overcoming Rory McIlroy to win the British Open. Smith's 8-under-64 was the lowest final round by a champion in the 30 times golf's oldest championship has been played at St. Andrews.
Are you 8-under-par? That's like a miniature golf score. That's ridiculous. Man, thank you, Jen.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. The streaming business is maturing. So are the viewers. Data from Nielsen show that Americans age 50 and older are powering the growth of streaming video in the U.S. Here's This Morning's Jennifer Koschenka.
Who is streaming these days? Apparently, older folks. More from Sarah Krause at the Wall Street Journal. Sarah, what's going on here?
So what we're seeing is that Americans who are 50 and older are powering the growth of streaming video in the U.S. So these are cord cutters. These are people who heard during the pandemic from their relatives that they were watching hit shows and wanted in on the action. A lot of these people are cord cutters, folks who sort of hung on to cable longer than younger demographics who were the first sort of waves to make the shift to streaming.
Did quarantining screening contribute to this?
It did, yes. And so this data is based on Nielsen. And what they found is really over the last year, there's been a pronounced increase in the 50 and older demographic. And some of that is because when folks were trapped at home in the pandemic, a lot of them set up sort of the plumbing that you need to stream, where they maybe hadn't been as comfortable or had the time to either get a smart TV or ask their children and grandchildren to help get them set up.
Is streaming in general easier to navigate than it used to be for everyone?
In some ways, I mean, that you raise a good point, which is that, like, certainly there is more choice than ever in terms of the apps that anyone can access to stream. For some older people, there are challenges to understanding how you log in, how you navigate to it, how you use your remote control to be able to stream versus just turning it on and being able to flick through cable channels. But, you know, in the families that I spoke with, once folks were hooked up with those systems and sort of taught, then, you know, they found it fairly easy to navigate.
We're speaking with Sarah Krause at the Wall Street Journal. Sarah, you mentioned that some of these people are cord cutters. Younger people generally did it first. Is it a money saver to go to streaming for these people as well?
It can be. There are certainly more ad-supported free services than there ever were, and there are a growing number of ad-supported subscription tiers where having the ads makes the actual cost of the subscription lower. So for many people, especially who are new to streaming, there can be a marked difference in the cost of being able to stream on one or two apps relative to a full cable bill. What has happened for younger generations and for a growing number of families, however, is when you start to have five, six different streaming apps, whether that be Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, when you start to really add all that up, the net effect can be something that starts to look like a cable bill.
Do we know what and how much the older people are watching on streaming services?
They tend to gravitate towards comedy, crime, thriller, action and adventure type genres. That's where they spend most of their time.
For the streamers, now that they have data like this, do you think they will skew some of their programming toward an older audience?
Potentially. One research firm that we spoke with said that they've seen a shift in catalogs already towards more of that content that is appealing to older users. So there are some signs that, yes, as this generation or generations becomes more comfortable streaming and spends more time doing so, that more of the content will be geared towards their preferences.
Sarah Krause at the Wall Street Journal with this morning's Jennifer Koschenka. Do you know what over 100 million people worldwide have in common? Their password, 123456. When NordPass researched 50 different countries' top passwords, that was number one. Here in the U.S. too. It's like some people want to get hacked. But believe me, you don't. That's why you need NordPass. NordPass isn't just a password manager, it's an essential cybersecurity tool. It generates secure passwords and stores them all in one place. You can even securely store your credit cards there too to save time shopping and browsing. NordPass has a very easy, user-friendly setup. I was ready to go in just a couple of minutes. And I love how simple it is to organize your data into categories like credit cards or secure notes. That's for things like our Wi-Fi password or the office alarm code. And if you don't like it, it comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. Get an exclusive NordPass deal plus one additional month free at nordpass.com/Gordon or use code Gordon at checkout. That's an exclusive deal plus one additional month free if you go to nordpass.com/Gordon.
Cutting through the clutter to bring you the people and stories that matter to you. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Monday, July 18. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. A scathing new report spreads lots of blame for the Uvalde school shooting in Texas. An armed civilian shot and killed a gunman at an Indiana mall who had fatally shot three people. Opening arguments begin today to determine whether the Parkland school shooter gets the death penalty or life in prison. Another batch of corporate earnings out this week. Major League Baseball is in its All-Star break with a home run derby tonight at Dodger Stadium. And the football coach raising money in a dangerous way. That story in about 20 minutes. How much longer will we hear claims of widespread election fraud? A group of Republican staffers and officials with robust partisan credentials has released a 70-plus page report walking through a number of considerations: the lawsuits, the evidence, and the audits. Its conclusion is as unsparing as it is unsurprising. So says Philip Bump, national correspondent at The Washington Post. Philip, explain.
We are, I think it's safe to say, well past the bounds of when people might normally be challenging the results of an election. You know, it's been 16 months since the election, at least more than that. And we are still seeing people who are expressing skepticism, despite the fact that there has been a broad range of analysis of what occurred in the election, despite the fact that no one has actually stepped forward and said, hey, I was part of this broad conspiracy to throw the election. And now we have this new document produced by a really sort of an all-star panel of what you might consider traditional conservative Republicans who walked through all the court cases, all the evidence, and said, hey, look, this election, this 2020 presidential election was not stolen. Donald Trump lost. You can't ask for more than that in terms of rebutting these allegations. But I think the safest assumption is it's just not going to have any effect.
Other than an answer being, well, this is just the world we live in, why is it that people are still skeptical, as you say?
Well, I think it's people should recognize that those who express the belief that the 2020 election was stolen start from the idea that the 2020 election was stolen. They believe that. And then they put together the evidence to reinforce that belief. They are not looking at the evidence and then coming to a conclusion. They have the conclusion and then looking for evidence to support it.
We're speaking with Philip Bump, national correspondent at The Washington Post. His story is called We Have Reached the Apex of Election Fraud Debunking. As you point out in the story, there were plenty of instances of individual cases of fraud.
Right.
But we see that every cycle pretty much. Is there any reason to believe that 2020 is any worse for individual cases than any other year?
No, in fact, there's reason to believe that it was probably better, right? There's a lot more scrutiny. There was a lot more attention being paid at the state level to where these incidents might have occurred. There was a lot more push, especially among Republican officials, to try and uproot incidents of fraud. So my guess is we've probably seen more people who were caught doing things either intentionally or accidentally that resulted in illegal votes being cast that we might have during a regular year, just because more people are looking for this stuff. Despite that, we've seen maybe a few dozen cases demonstrated, actually prosecuted, of people who cast ballots, some, again, intentionally, some accidentally, and that's it.
How do you answer when people say, yeah, well, Philip, of course you work for the Washington Post. What kind of article do we expect you to publish?
Well, in this case, what I'd say is, look, this isn't me. This is Theodore Olson, who was Solicitor General under George W. Bush. This is Ben Ginsburg, who worked as a Republican elections lawyer for a long time. This is Michael Luddy, who is, you know, one of the premier conservative judges, who, if you had talked to any of these folks back in 2014 and said, hey, do you think you'll ever do something to work together to put together a document undercutting a Republican president, they would have laughed in your face and been like, no, like we are stalwart allies of the Republican Party. But now, of course, because they're willing to speak the truth that Donald Trump doesn't, they've been cast as outsiders.
I often thought, too, as just an outside analyst, a junior analyst here, that the majority of states were controlled by Republicans in 2020, and I think still are now. So there were a lot of people who stood to gain from a Donald Trump victory. And probably would have willingly, I don't know, found fraud if there was some.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, we had a lot of people who were really actively looking. I mean, like, look at Georgia, right? Governor Kemp and Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, they worked hard to try and figure out if there was fraud in their state. There was actually Raffensperger's office announced a number of prosecutions, both in 2020 and from prior elections, because he had done so much work trying to figure out, you know, where there might have been fraudulent ballots. There are multiple recounts. Doug Ducey in Arizona, very clearly someone who wanted to see Donald Trump win, was an ally of Trump's, did similarly a lot of work. And they just came up with nothing because there was nothing to be found, pretty clearly.
So what happens in the November midterms? What might we expect?
Well, I think one thing we can expect to see candidates who lose claiming that they lost due to fraud. Because that belief is now so deeply embedded, particularly in Republican politics. I think we also see some ramifications for how people look at the 2024 elections, right? We look at, you know, the extent to which people are willing to embrace this idea that all elections are suspect, which makes it easier for elections then to be contested in the future.
Thanks, Philip. Philip Bump, national correspondent at The Washington Post.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. Don't forget, if you've missed anything, check out a podcast of today's show. It's available every day on the This Morning with Gordon Deal app, plus on Spotify, Google, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Since the beginning of 2021, a federal law has required hospitals to post prices and establish a consumer-friendly price list for 300 common procedures and services. But a new study finds more than half of U.S. hospitals have failed to meet either of the two main requirements of the law, and only two hospitals have been fined. An update from Ken Altucker, consumer health reporter at USA Today. Ken, what about this law?
It's a law that the federal government, Congress passed, and that the agency that oversees Medicare is enforcing, called the Hospital Price Transparency Law. I'm sure many of your listeners may have gotten a bill from a hospital that for whatever service they went in for, and these can obviously be pretty expensive. So what this law aims to do is to tell consumers ahead of time, particularly for things that are non-emergency procedures. I listed an example here for like a spinal fusion, and it gives people an opportunity to compare prices in theory. But what we've seen from a couple of studies, one done by the Journal of American Medical Association and a second done by a nonprofit that is closely tracking this law, called Patients' Rights Advocate, is that hospitals really are sort of slow to comply with this. Now, it's been in effect since 2021, last year, and it's gradually increasing requirements on what hospitals are to report. But so far, fewer than half are complying. Mm.
They don't seem motivated to, based on the lack of enforcement, I guess.
Right. Medicare, though, recently began enforcing this with two fines for hospitals in the Atlanta area, from one hospital chain totaling over $1 million. So what we're seeing is, from patient rights advocates' point of view, is too slow compliance. They'd like to see a little more teeth in the enforcement from Medicare. Medicare counters that, well, you know, it's a gradual process. It's not, you know, look at the website and find them the next day. It involves, you know, authenticating the findings that these prices aren't being posted, communicating with the hospital, giving them a chance to correct it. If they don't act on that chance to correct it, that's when, you know, further fines and such can be imposed.
We're speaking with Ken Altucker, consumer health reporter at USA Today. His story is called Hospitals Must Say How Much They Charge for Hundreds of Procedures. Here's why many don't. So I get the sense, my summary would be, they're slow walking it, right? They're not interested, hospitals, in doing this. They want to make it as difficult as possible for us as consumers to see what they charge. But what do they say on their behalf?
Well, they've obviously been through a very difficult time. Hospitals, we have the pandemic that obviously they're dealing with, and that's first and foremost on their mind in terms of taking care of patients. And they have other IT requirements during this period when, you know, it's not necessarily the doctors and the nurses that are obviously handling this. It's the back office people who handle the computers and the billing people at hospitals. And they say they've been busy with things like telehealth, which has created these whole new systems where they're taking care of patients remotely, and they have to set up the computer systems for that and billing. Now, you know, consumer advocates say that's sort of an excuse. That's their point of view, that they think there's been plenty of time and that they're just being slow to comply.
Thanks, Ken. Ken Altucker, consumer health reporter at USA Today.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. 9 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A review of the Uvalde school massacre by Texas lawmakers found that widespread failures by hundreds of heavily armed law enforcement officers resulted in a delayed confrontation with the shooter that may have cost lives. Although 376 officers from local, state, and federal agencies rushed to the school, none took command of the chaotic scene. Vincent Salazar lost his granddaughter, Layla, in the massacre.
Texas failed the students. Law enforcement failed the students. Our government failed the students.
The 18-year-old gunman was eventually confronted and killed by a team of Border Patrol agents more than an hour after police started to arrive. The 77-page report concluded that officers failed to prioritize saving the lives of innocent victims over their own safety.
Number two.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has removed Ukraine's general prosecutor and the head of the Security Service of Ukraine amid allegations that their offices were riddled with officials who were collaborating with Russia. While the dismissal of the prosecutor surprised some analysts, the ouster of the security chief had been forecast for some time. The Security Service of Ukraine has for years faced allegations that its ranks are infiltrated by Russian assets.
Number three.
Members of the House committee investigating the attack on the Capitol say Thursday's primetime hearing will offer the most compelling evidence yet of then-President Trump's dereliction of duty on the day of the January 6th insurrection, with new witnesses detailing his failure to stem an angry mob storming the Capitol. Committee member Adam Kinzinger of Illinois on CBS.
We have filled in the blanks. I can't necessarily say that the motives behind every piece of information we know we'll be able to explain, but this is going to open people's eyes in a big way.
The committee issued an extraordinary subpoena last week to the Secret Service to produce texts by tomorrow from January 5th and 6th, 2021, following conflicting reports about whether they were deleted. Living in a big city may come with better job opportunities or more weekend activities, but at night might not be the healthiest choice you can make. U.S. News & World Report ranked the 500 healthiest counties based on metrics such as economic strength, public safety, and population health, and named Los Alamos County in New Mexico as number one. Number two is Falls Church, Virginia, followed by Douglas County, Colorado, Morgan County, Utah, and Carver County, Minnesota.
All right. Thank you, Jen. Alcatraz, the infamous prison on a rocky island in San Francisco Bay, is known for the dangerous currents that surround it. Decades after Alcatraz closed, swimmers made escaping Alcatraz an athletic event that poses dangers like not only the dangerous current, but also the cold water and great white sharks. Fox News says Rich Carroll remains undaunted by all of this. The 54-year-old high school football coach at St. Francis Prep in Fresh Meadows, New York, plans to swim the approximately 2-mile course from Alcatraz to the St. Francis Yacht Club in San Francisco next month, all to help raise funds for his school's football program. Mr. Carroll had total knee replacement back in 2019 and swam to help rehabilitate, then became interested in open water swims. This is no event for beginners, by the way. Among its guidance, you should be able to swim 1 mile comfortably in a pool in under 40 minutes. The 2022 Alcatraz Shark Fest Swim takes place Sunday, August 7. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.